Good evening. As Wall Street stumbles, a second wave of COVID engulfs the South. A general apologizes for appearing at a protest, and a former nun is sentenced for symbolically disarming a nuclear missile. With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the WBAI News for Thursday, June 11th, 2020. Cases of coronavirus are rising at alarming rates throughout the United States, even as hospitalizations decline in New York. In Arizona, Texas, and North Carolina, the surge threatens plans to reopen schools as hospitals prepare for the worst. Concerns about a second wave of infections has risen as states have reopened, and Texas reported three consecutive days of record-breaking COVID-19 hospitalizations. Meanwhile, the increase in infections pulled stocks down sharply Thursday. The bellwether Dow Jones Industrial Average traded 1,700 points, or 6.3% lower, as other indices also dropped steeply. But Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin told CNBC the economy must remain open.
We can't shut down the economy again. I think we've learned that if you shut down the economy, you're going to create more damage, and not just economic damage, but there are other areas. And we've talked about this, of medical problems and everything else that get put on hold.
Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin. President Donald Trump said today he's planning to hold rallies that may draw thousands of people in four states, Arizona, Florida, Oklahoma, and Texas. All of them are among the states with rising cases. And President Trump's walk through Lafayette Park near the White House on June 1st is still causing controversy. Trump's photo op came after embarrassing coverage of his retreat to the White House bunker as demonstrators pushed along fences around the executive mansion. Police and National Guard used chemical irritants, flashbang grenades, and physical force to clear the park of peaceful protesters. Among those with Trump was General Mark Milley, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, in military uniform. In an address today to graduates of the National Defense University, General Milley apologized.
As many of you saw, the result of the photograph of me at Lafayette Square last week, that sparked a national debate about the role of the military in civil society. I should not have been there. My presence in that moment and in that environment created a perception of the military involved in domestic politics. As a commissioned, uniformed officer, it was a mistake that I have learned from, and I sincerely hope we all can learn from it. We who wear the cloth of our nation come from the people of our nation, and we must hold dear the principle of an apolitical military that is so deeply rooted in the very essence of our republic. And this is not easy. It takes time and work and effort, but it may be the most important thing each and every one of us does every single day. And my second piece of advice is very simple. Embrace the Constitution. Keep it close to your heart. It is our North Star. It's our map to a better future. Though we are not a perfect union, believe in the United States. Believe in our country, believe in your troops, and believe in our purpose. Few other nations have been able to change for the greater good, and that is because of the rights and values embedded in our Constitution. The freedoms guaranteed to us in the Constitution allow people to demand change, just as the peaceful protesters are doing all across the country. That is why we serve in the military. On day one, you and I, we all swore an oath to support and defend the Constitution and its essential American principle that all men and women are born free and equal. That is the foundation of our military ethos, who we are as service members and as an institution. All of us in uniform are willing to die for that idea, the idea that is America. And so we must also be willing to live for that idea, for freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom to peacefully assemble, and freedom to vote, and freedom to believe as you wish in your religion. These are essential freedoms that are the cornerstone of our country. Americans have spilled their blood to protect them in the past, and they continue to be worth fighting for. This we will defend.
General Milley's remarks risk angering the president, who claims his photo op was a Churchill moment. Winston Churchill, the leader of Great Britain during World War II, was famous for riding subways to work with ordinary citizens without security during the war. Meanwhile, in New York City, the president of the Police Benevolent Association, Mike O'Meara, expressed his anger over the portrayal of police officers after the killing of George Floyd.
We all read in the papers that in the black community, mothers are worried about their children getting home from school without being killed by a cop. What world are we living in? That doesn't happen. It does not happen. I am not Derek Chauvin. They are not him. This isn't stained by someone in Minneapolis. It's still got a shine on it. And so do theirs. So do theirs. Stop treating us like animals and thugs and start treating us with some respect.
Mike O'Meara of the PBA. In related news, an officer who took a knee at the request of George Floyd protesters last month apologized, saying the cop in me wants to kick my own ass. Lieutenant Robert Catani of the Midtown South Precinct said he regrets his horrible decision to give in to a crowd of protesters' demands and kneel at Foley Square in Lower Manhattan with several other cops. Catani said in an email his decision to kneel goes against every principle and value I stand for, and he considered resigning from the force. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul D'Arienzo. In December of 1994, Anthony Baez, 29 years old, was throwing a football in the Bronx that accidentally hit a parked police cruiser. Officer Francis Lavoti, in attempting to arrest Anthony, used a chokehold, causing his death. Lavoti was eventually charged with violating Baez's civil rights and was sentenced to 7.5 years in prison. His mother, Iris Baez, spoke with WBAI today. She says the events of the past week are the results of years of work by grieving families.
Everybody woke up from the days that they were in and noticed that the police abuse of power, abuse of conduct, murder is still real. And they have to come out and say something about it. And not only that, the CPR coalition together with families to make changes, got together, and historically we made changes. They passed 3 bills this week, and it took the families and the CPR and people in the community to make it happen. So 25 years, I'm proud of my community that comes up and stay present to make a change. And these are the changes. The 58A, Special Prosecutor, the State Act bill that got passed yesterday in Congress and in the Assembly, and the governor's going to sign it already, or he's going to sign it into law.
It seems like a long time, 25 years, that it took to get these reforms.
Don't forget, justice is slow for the Latino and the black. It's slow, but it's sure. It comes when people rise up like they did now for George, they rise and everybody listen.
How would you say the general feeling among all the families of what happened in the last 2 weeks, the changes that have happened so quickly?
We are ecstatic because that now things are moving. We work so hard for, because this is not a one person thing. This is a collective of people in the community coming now doing protests and just pushing the button.
What do you think of the idea of defunding the police?
There's too much money for the police. I think they should go to the community in need. They should go to social work, especially now, mental health, the homeless. Those are things that we have to look out for, that we have to watch, take care of in our community.
When you go out to these protests, it's in the past, you saw the families, you saw people, black and Latino people protesting because these were attacks in the black and Latino community. But now you go out and you see everybody, all of America,
Yes. Rainbow. Yes. I'm proud of all my Americans that are out there protesting in rain, because this week it rained in Florida, it rained. So they were out there, they're there every day. They're still protesting now. You know, for justice.
The protests are continuing and there's no end in sight and there's no talk about it stopping. What ultimate goals do you think could come of this?
better schools, better, you know, communication in the neighborhood with the police, better interaction. The police helping the people, really helping the people, the community. I know we got some bad people out there that the police got to arrest, not kill. We don't pay their salary to kill somebody. That's why we gave them the taser, the stun gun, right? We gave them stun guns so they wouldn't have to use the real bullets. They murdered by choking. Lavori choked my son to death. He left him laying on the floor, no CPR, no nothing, didn't help him. And we proved it was compression to the neck and chest that they put. They were trying to say he had asthma. We proved that it wasn't asthma that killed him. It was the compression of the police sitting on him.
In your case, in your son's case, did those officers, were they punished?
Lavori went federal. In the local, a cop won't put another cop in jail, and the DA needs the cop to make a case. It was very, very light. And then we protested and took it to the federal, and the federal found him violating his Anthony civil rights, because he already had been three times already. We brought it up in the court three times, so he had three different charges on him. So when he got to the federal, the only charge they could have put on him was violating Anthony's human rights. They gave him 7.5 years.
7.5 years for killing somebody.
Yeah, he got 7.5 years.
You think it's going to be different now? The officers in Minneapolis, they're being...
Oh, yes, definitely. There's too much outcry for the community.
After the sorrows and pain you had to go through and what's been happening now, what would you like to...
To George's family, I want to say my heart is with them, because this is something they're going to carry for the rest of their lives. It doesn't go away, and it doesn't even get easy. Because every day they're killing somebody, they're abusing somebody. It all comes right back. The minute you hear about it, it snaps right back in. I just want to tell the community, when you see something, say something. When you see a policeman doing something, call his superiors. Report him.
Bias is the mother of Anthony, who was killed in a police chokehold after his football hit a police car by accident in 1994. Meanwhile, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy says he supports a ban on police chokeholds during an arrest, saying there should be severe consequences if they are used when someone is already in handcuffs. While House Democrats are proposing a bill, the Justice and Policing Act, banning chokeholds, ending immunity for police or prosecution in civil suits, ending racial profiling, and setting new standards for policing. And 9 members of Congress have signed a letter to the heads of the FBI, DEA, National Guard, and Customs and Border Protection, demanding the immediate end of the use of drones to monitor protests. The FBI has not confirmed the use of drones, but may have flown a jet equipped with dirt boxes that can collect cell phone location data over Washington. The representatives write, the use of the drones is a deep and profound breach of Americans' First and Fourth Amendment rights. And in New York City, Mayor de Blasio was asked by WBAI's Jillian Jonas if he supports the city council bill to increase transparency and oversight over the NYPD's use of sophisticated new surveillance technologies and information sharing networks.
I want maximum transparency, but not transparency to the point that it undermines the valid need to keep people safe. We got to figure out what that balance is. We obviously have tremendous legal oversight and proper legal restrictions to make sure that ability to gain information is handled appropriately. The other thing is, you saw in the approach we took here in this city, I was adamant that we should not have the National Guard in New York City, we should not have military in New York City, we should not be using the kinds of techniques and equipment that some other cities have used, most notably and tragically years ago, Ferguson, but many others. The rubber bullets, the tear gas, the different equipment that just doesn't belong in a setting where we're trying to protect civilians' right to protest. And I'm very, very interested in making sure we understand, the public understands exactly what the NYPD has and doesn't have, again, within the context of appropriate security issues, because we don't want to fall into that situation where a police force that's meant to be about civilian work ever acts in a military fashion.
Dubbed the Public Oversight of Surveillance Technology, or POST Act, the bill addresses worries over the use of information collected by New York's contact tracing program to track the spread of the coronavirus. And despite Attorney General William Barr's statement that protests in the wake of the killings of George Floyd were being orchestrated by a group called Antifa for anti-fascist, the New York Times reports little or no evidence to back up Barr's claim. At one point, Trump claimed Antifa is a domestic terrorist group and has sent FBI agents to protests trying to find their influence. Among Trump's conspiracy theories is that a 75-year-old peace activist, Martin Gugino, who was pushed to the ground and seriously injured by police in Buffalo, New York, was part of an Antifa setup. The two officers have been arrested, charged with assault. Gugino is still in hospital, where friends say he's recovering. New School history professor Jeremy Varon has protested alongside Gugino and says Trump is a liar.
I know him in the context of a group called Witness Against Torture, which formed in 2005 to try to close Guantanamo and oppose U.S. torture. It's rooted very much in the Catholic worker tradition. It's a very tight-knit group that we would have demonstrations annually in Washington, D.C., coupled with a fast that might take up to 2 weeks, direct actions around the city. And Martin was a stalwart part of that community connected to a broader Catholic worker culture. I was horrified to see him assaulted by Buffalo police. The good thing that has come out of it is that a lot of people have, in a new way, seen what the face of police brutality looks like. And there's been almost universal outrage, both at his assault and Trump's depraved tweet accusing him of all kinds of grossly untrue things.
So he's not a member of Antifa or any other subversive radical group that uses violence?
Not in the least. No, I mean, he's a militant pacifist, deeply committed to social justice. He had a few arrests for nonviolent civil disobedience at the White House, fairly routine. His dedication is to promoting, you know, human rights, freedom, and equality for all people. It doesn't surprise me at all that he was in the street supporting the Black Lives Matter movement as best he could. His friends uniformly described him as a gentle and curious and sweet and charming, and I can tell you he's all of those things. He kind of laughed off the Trump tweet, doesn't really want to make himself the issue. He wants to keep the focus on systemic racism and the power of the Black Lives Matter movement. He's also still very sick, moved out of the ICU, but still in the hospital. And maybe he will be more public-facing down the line, but I think he wants his privacy preserved.
What about the police in this, the two cops involved?
What they did is horrible, and it's horrible that whole tactical unit quit in solidarity with them, and it shows their instinct to circle the wagons and defend their outrageous, and in this case, I think illegal, conduct. The whole episode has shown how entrenched police are in a warrior mentality, the ease with which they make American citizens the enemy in the streets. And again, it is an illustration of the problem with aggressive policing that is one of the very objects of protest of this very powerful Black Lives Matter movement. It's amazing how many people have rallied in sympathy and support of Martin. Most rational folks think the Trump tweet was depraved, that old kindly man was a victim of a unprovoked assault. This video has been seen by apparently 45 million people around the world, so it really has touched a nerve and captured people's imagination. And again, I wish my friend weren't injured, but in an odd way, the whole episode has been a powerful set of lessons for the American people and the world.
What's a militant pacifist?
Somebody who is confronting power. Sometimes in illicit ways, you know, when warranted nonviolent civil disobedience, just having a certain tenacity and determination in ways that you know, the public and the government hopefully couldn't avoid. And Martin was very much part of that effort.
New School history professor Jeremy Varon. Another militant peace activist is 81-year-old Elizabeth McAllister, a former nun. She's been in jail in Georgia for symbolically disarming a nuclear submarine with an activist group an activist peace group, the Kings Bay Plowshares. Earlier this week, she was sentenced to time served, 18 months for the act of civil disobedience, 3 years probation, and a $33,000 restitution. Another member of the group out on bail awaiting sentencing is Mark Colville. He says the judge in the case failed to see the issue is world destruction.
The application of the law, especially in the federal court, does not always get us to justice, okay? And in the sentencing phase, especially in a case like this, it's an opportunity for the judge to mitigate that a little bit. She has all kinds of leeway, for example, converting what they call restitution into something like community service, which none of us would object to doing, probably. The court recognized the trial, even the judge herself recognized our sincerely held religious beliefs and that we were acting on those. And so it's rather absurd at this point to then sentence people to violate their own religious beliefs by paying money to the Navy, whereas that could easily have been converted into something that we can in conscience comply with. But the judge chose not to do that. And that seems to be a harbinger for the rest of us now. This court is giving no quarter to any kind of dissent or conscience. The judge even had the audacity that Liz was convicted by a jury of her peers. It was a jury of people who were enforced into ignorance during the process. The facts of this case were never in dispute, mainly because 98% of the evidence that the government used against us was provided to them by us. We actually filmed what we did. We weren't disputing the facts of the case. We were disputing what they meant. The judge essentially did not allow us to make any argument with regard to what the facts of the case meant before a jury. There really was no point in having a jury in that sense.
How do you feel about this, that such a big thing as nuclear weapons is met with a jury that didn't really see or act on the fact that these are weapons capable of destroying the world, and they just treated it as another minor protest case?
It is standard operating procedure in the federal courts now to absolutely seal off any of its military policy, but particularly nuclear weapons, from any kind of legal scrutiny. Nobody in this country has ever voted for a nuclear weapon. Nobody has ever approved a policy regarding nuclear weapons. It's all essentially been done in secret. When we go into court, one of the main purposes of the action itself was to change that, to take the accusations upon ourselves so that we might be able to get into court and talk about the immorality and the illegality, according to our own constitutional and international laws, of nuclear weapons. It's the only way that these policies can even be mentioned, is when we put ourselves in a position where we're in a compromised position before the law. The judge just perpetuated that. Nuclear weapons remain in a legal vacuum, unquestioned by courts.
Are there going to be more actions like this? I mean, are you going to go on to more plants? Are you going to violate all your orders and all the threats and just do it again?
In terms of what more actions will be done, really it's a community that we're trying to build around these actions. And so we're hoping that more people will be inspired and come forward to engage in this process of direct disarmament. The rest of us have all asserted our right, by the way, to be sentenced in public physically before a judge, and that's why nobody else was sentenced today. But the state of Georgia continues to be one of the terrible states in terms of the pandemic because of their early opening and the idiocy of the governor. They're due for a spike again, so I'm certainly hoping that we can get this sentencing date for the rest of us postponed further.
Mark Colville is awaiting sentencing for symbolically disarming a nuclear missile submarine as part of the Kings Bay Plowshares. And finally, in Seattle, anarchists and others, some wielding machine guns, legal in open carry Washington, have set up checkpoints around a famously quirky neighborhood known as Capitol Hill and declared an autonomous zone. They also occupied a police station, renaming it the No Cop Station. President Trump has threatened the governor of Washington, Jay Inslee, demanding on Twitter he take back Seattle. Inslee wrote on Twitter, mocking Trump for the misspelling in his tweet, "A man who is totally incapable of governing should stay out of Washington State's business. Stoop tweeting." Inslee says the state is negotiating a peaceful resolution. And And that's some of the news for Thursday, June 11th, 2020. The news was produced with Linda Perry and Jillian Jonas. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.